This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
All right. Hello and welcome to Green Talks, the weekly talk show where we discuss sustainability initiatives that have been created through the use of the environmental stewardship fee. I'm your host, Zoe Gabrielson, and today I'm joined by some special guests. They're here to discuss their project, and I'll let them introduce themselves.
Hey, Zoe. I'm Joe Brewer. I'm here with Bruce Swetnam. We're with the College of Design. So I was a grad student and previously and now work for the UK College of Design.
And again, I'm Bruce Swetnam. I'm a professor in the School of Architecture in the College of Design and ran the studio that produced the work at the orphanage in Chamois Orphanage in Port-au-Prince, Haiti.
Okay, awesome. So today we're going to be talking about your orphanage project. I'll let you guys give a little bit of a background, and then you can talk about your roles in the project.
Yeah, well, Bruce really was introduced to this project really a few years ago now. But it's really kind of a beautiful opportunity for students at UK to be able to contribute and do something tangible. So, Bruce, I don't know if you want to talk about the background a little bit, how it came across your desk.
Yeah, sure. I worked in developing countries in the 1980s quite a lot, and specifically in the South Pacific, Caribbean, and Central America. And interim dean was aware that I did those sorts of projects, and they were responding to an inquiry from Grace Missions, a local group that was a sponsor for the Chamois Orphanage, and asked if we could look at designing an addition to the orphanage to relieve some overcrowding. The girls at the orphanage had been displaced by the 2010 earthquake in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, and they had been moving from place to place and survived several hurricanes in the interim, and they had finally landed at a site in Bon Repos, which is a suburb of Port-au-Prince, Haiti. Fairly small house, 1,500 square feet, 27 girls and three caregivers lived at this, but they had a fairly large site compound that they lived at. And so the challenge was to come up with an addition to the orphanage that would relieve some overcrowding and meet some of the other needs.
That's awesome. So we're going to talk more about how this project relates to sustainability later in the episode. But I think I just want to highlight something you said about the causes of why their orphanage had some issues. And I mean, you mentioned earthquakes, you mentioned hurricanes, and we know that as climate change is becoming more and more of an issue, that those things are going to keep happening, and developing countries around the world are especially susceptible to those things. So it'd be great if our consumers could, or our listeners could, keep that in mind throughout the duration of the episode. Because I think that's
a great point, and I think that one of the main points of this project is that those things you're talking about, climate change, how the effects on the weather, all of those things tend to affect those that are most vulnerable or that sort of live on the edges. And so I think that as people are thinking about this through a lens of sustainability, they should also be thinking about how human development and equitability and things, they all intertwine, that they're all sort of interconnected.
Right. Okay. So with that in mind, kind of some of the factors that are making this project even more intersectional, can you give us more of a background on the culture? You mentioned that they're in Haiti. How was that adjustment for you guys to learn about their culture and work within it?
Well, Haiti shares the island with the Dominican Republic. It's Espanola. Very different cultures. Haiti is French heritage. They have issues with corrupt governments and have for years and years, and that's one of the systemic problems in Haiti. The There are differences in our culture, and I think that's one of the greatest experiences when you travel outside of the United States, is it changes your frame of reference. Just a couple of things that come to mind. One thing that was a problem for us was what they call Haitian time. Things don't always show up on time. People don't show up on time. So building projects get delayed, and we were on a pretty tight timeline. So that was kind of an interesting adaptation we had to make. When we would go places with the girls, they would just hold hands with us, and that was kind of different for us as well. Just kind of a subtle thing, but... anyway, Joe, you got anything?
No, I think that's exactly it. And also, just thinking about the Haitian people, I think about, of course, food and music. But I just think the rich cultural history of the Haitian people, they're often in the Western Hemisphere sort of denigrated, I think, and also marginalized. And the thing I think that surprised me the most is that seeing their ability for community in a lot of ways is much better than ours here even. And so, you know, there's that richness, there's that granularity that they have, and maybe in part because of that Haitian time, that is slowing down, taking time for each other, taking time for their neighbors, that impacted me. I still think about it almost every day.
Yeah, I think that a lot of times we as Americans in particular have a very America-centric viewpoint, and we think that the way that we do things is the only right way to do things. So when people travel outside the country and they have that experience in other countries, especially when it's ones that we might have thought of as having particular economic conditions and the fact that they're not the same kind of economies as ours, so we assume that everybody's living in poverty. And I think it's really great to explore those other aspects of their culture and be cognizant of that when we're doing projects and initiatives in countries like that. So you also, in addition to the playground at the orphanage, held a workshop for high school students, correct? Can you tell us a little about that?
This studio took place over two semesters, and we learned a lot on our first trip. We had approached the problem by grouping students into teams of two. We came up with three proposals, but when we traveled to Haiti, it went from being a very theoretical design studio approach to this is something we need to solve, this is something we need to address. And so we applied design thinking to that, merged the three proposals together, and came up with a single proposal that was very buildable using sustainable principles. But in the meantime, we thought that it would be beneficial to not only address that issue, but actually teach some high school students how we approach design through design thinking. And so Joe actually put together, along with some of the other students, a great program, and we delivered it to some high school students in Louisville.
Yeah, so traditionally, design thinking, as we think about it, has gone to essentially the top 1%. So if you think about all the world's great buildings, all of the great products in the world, things that are absolutely beautiful and valuable, the vast majority of those things are all for people that are in power or have money. And a big thrust of this studio wasn't just the girls in Haiti, although they were the driver behind it. One of the big thrusts was to get people to recognize that design thinking, so being well considered, being really thoughtful about people's needs, that type of thinking could apply to anyone, especially those that are most vulnerable. Again, there's a huge blue ocean out there. 99% of people have never been exposed to design thinking. And so what we wanted to do is go challenge these high school students and look at this project and look at a project in Honduras with a medical center there and really challenge them to start thinking about using empathy to think about people's needs and to start really considering not just the lives of other people, but how those lives could be enriched just by using thoughtfulness and ingenuity.
That's awesome. It sounds like accessibility and equity is something that you guys really focused on in your project. So kind of in that same vein with the culture and the new experiences and challenges that you guys had to overcome, what would you say were some of the biggest challenges? What were some things that threw you for a loop or obstacles you had to overcome a little bit?
Working in Haiti is not easy. it is an island. I know that sounds like it's stating the obvious, but what that means is anything from a hammer to nails to even forestry products, because that side of the island is completely decimated. There's almost no horticulture left, and lots of trees were completely cleared out a long time ago. So all of that had to be imported, has to be imported into the island. And so when you're trying to even just find simple things like tape measures or that sort of thing, you really have to be resourceful. You have to look a lot of different places. And I think probably most importantly, don't you think, Bruce, is be patient.
You do have to have patience. One of the issues just preparing to go were dealing with travel alerts and getting permission to travel to Haiti and where we were going to stay through the university. That was a big deal. Got that done, and then we had to deal with economics, trying to make sure that we had the resources economically to do what we needed to do. We had aligned ourselves with Haitians to work with. And then living accommodations. We tried to find a place close to where we were going to build. Water is always an issue. The groundwater is not potable. And so we always had to be conscious of what we were drinking and what we were eating so that we could avoid our own stomachs giving us trouble.
Yeah, that's something that a lot of people might not think about traveling. So what was some of the impact on students? And I know you said that you were a student during this time. So what were some of the ways that UK students were impacted by this project? I know that that's something that the SSC always looks for in proposals. So,
yeah, the Student Sustainability Council, of course, was the perfect partner. Although, I don't know, some people may look at this project and not immediately think sustainability, but there were lots of components to it. But I think that, Zoe, the component that you just hit on about the impact on the lives of students is probably at least the most salient for us here back now that we're home. And what that means is it is impossible to go to Haiti and not have your heart changed. It just is. And again, you do see economic depression. You do see adversity. You deal with adversity on an obviously much smaller scale when you're down there than locals. But I think probably more importantly is seeing that sense of community, seeing that overcoming adversity, or even things that we think are adversity that really aren't. You know, it's like small inconveniences that sometimes I'm sitting in traffic and thinking about how frustrated I am. I just remember, take my mind back to Port-au-Prince and go, okay, this really is just a minor inconvenience. This is not the world ending here.
Yeah, and so what's ironic about traveling there is we go there to try to change lives, and the lives that get changed the most are our own.
So you would say that in addition to the academic sort of aspect of this project, you also really gained a lot personally. So it was kind of that dual faceted experience.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, the academics are a critical part. I mean, in a way, they're the central part. They're the reason we're there, to learn building techniques for our particular discipline, learning design, learning how when you design something on a computer and then go to build it, things change. It's not an esoteric thing. It's suddenly concrete and real. But man, when we come back, we talk a little bit about our building experiences, but we talk a lot of bit about 20-some little girls in an orphanage, you know. And I think that those are definitely the more salient, lasting impacts.
All right. Well, we are talking to some folks from the Haiti Orphanage Project, and we will be right back after a short break. Hey, listeners. You are listening to Green Talks, and we are going to finish up our interview with some folks from the Haiti Orphanage Project. We were just talking about some of the student impact that was created by this project, in addition to some of the cultural factors that are related to going into another country, especially a developing country, and kind of being sensitive to those issues while creating a big impact. So now I would like to ask you guys a little bit more about what it's like to do this project, in consideration to the three pillars of sustainability. So for our listeners who might not be familiar, the three pillars of sustainability refers to the environmental, economic, and social aspects of sustainability. So that might be if you're a business major or if you think more about it in terms of kind of companies and businesses, might be called the triple bottom line, balancing those things. And it's also a major tenet of sustainability consideration. So can you guys talk about that a little bit?
Certainly. So the core of the project was to relieve overcrowding in this relatively small structure that the girls lived in. And so we had designed an addition that was going to be built as a dormitory, but while we were fundraising for that, we wanted to do something more immediate. And so we thought we could relieve some of the overcrowding by creating an outdoor environment that would allow them to get out of the house, exercise, and it also had an outdoor classroom component to that. And so there were very practical things we were trying to solve, but the more poetic thing was to actually get the girls at a higher elevation through the play structure to be able to look over the walls and see the horizon. And so one of the pillars of sustainability is social, and we're trying to empower young women to grow up to be strong women that are educated and be leaders in their community. So that's one of the pillars. Environmentally, we did research in trying to use waste products, and there's a lot of trash, and a lot, especially plastics from water bottles in Haiti. So we tried to do research to reinforce concrete with some of those byproducts. And then economically, we designed with the idea that we would use local labor and materials as much as possible to infuse the economy with some dollars to solve the problem.
Yeah, and you know, it's nice that you all frame that as the three pillars of sustainability, because I think that a lot of folks, their traditional view of sustainability is that it's full of compromise. And I actually argue that it is not full of compromise. It's actually a way to celebrate different variables than people often do. And so with this project, Bruce speaks about it beautifully, about getting the girls up above the walls. And how do you do that? Well, there's an emotional impact there. And the hope is that we are introducing different construction techniques that are much more efficient. They're much more efficient in building. And we're hoping that by doing that, we can also celebrate the lives of the folks that are impacted by the project. And so that would make that sustainable lesson much more palatable for a culture that maybe is stuck in a specific way of building. And so we really don't want sustainability to seem restrictive. We want it to seem liberating. We want it to be empowered.
So then, I mean, you kind of already touched on this, but specifically with architecture or design, it seems like that may be a way to promote sustainability. And I know that you said earlier that not a lot of people have access to that. It's kind of a 1% sort of a situation. So how does that work? How can people get involved with design? How can they use it to promote sustainability? And in practice, what has your experience been with that?
That's a great question. I think that as designers, we always have to be aware of the fact that what we do is inherently wasteful. So anytime that you design a new building, that's one of the most energy intensive processes that humans have. I mean, it's right up there with driving and flying and all of that. So we always have to be aware of that impact. And so I think that the way that sustainability sort of can be, we can almost evangelize for it out into the world, is to teach people about the value of, say, like existing structures as an example, and say that remodeling, or see the beauty in existing structures, see the beauty in different ways of building and making, and not just do things because that's the way the construction industry has created momentum, that's the way the economy has created momentum, but actually push back on some of that stuff and to really help educate, to inspire, hopefully, folks to understand their impact on the world around them. And I know Bruce has taught for many, many years. I mean, he was way ahead of the game on sustainable architecture. So I don't know what your experiences were that led you to that.
Yeah, Joe's right on with that. And I was inspired by some teachers that I had that were pioneers in solar energy. But Joe's correct in that buildings are very energy intensive in the way that they're made and how they're operated. And we talk about CAFE standards for automobiles, but in fact, buildings use much more energy than cars do. And so we do have standards that we try to build to. LEED is one. There are other standards as well. But we teach those things in school, and we try to bring our projects to a very sustainable level in operation as well as manufacturing. And Joe mentioned lean and very efficient ways to build, but the most efficient thing we can do is adaptive reuse of existing buildings.
Awesome. Well, if people are interested in design, if they're interested in architecture, how would you recommend they incorporate sustainability into that? I mean, beyond what you guys just said, specifically for students, how can they put that in their curriculum? Like, what can they do? And then also, if people are interested in sustainability and maybe design's not something they've considered before, how do you guys recommend going about that career path-wise?
That's a great question. There's a couple of points to that question. The first off, I think, is just anybody being able to incorporate it. We believe that design thinking, and what we call design thinking, we don't monopolize that. That there is no shortage of information out there, for sure. And so if folks would go start to find the forums and different websites that are amazing resources for this type of thinking, that they could also become designers. You know, a lot of people don't think of themselves that way. But I am a firm believer in as many students as we see come through our school every year that anyone could become a designer. It just takes a lot of thought. But it's fortunate now, too, that Bruce is our associate dean for students at this College of Design. And so in terms of career paths and in terms of getting students plugged into the college, he's the perfect resource.
Well, thanks, Joe, for that. I would just say that we can actually look back sometimes to be more sustainable. We used to have buildings that took more advantage of daylight, or they would site the buildings in such a way to take advantage of cooling breezes in the summer and to block wind from entering the building in the winter, or planting deciduous and conifer trees in specific locations. So we've become so dependent on energy that we've sort of abandoned some of those passive strategies, and I think we can start to reincorporate some of those things into how we think about buildings.
That saves a lot of money too, right? I mean, if you're not spending money on air conditioning and stuff like that, you can really save some big bucks.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And also, you can put more money into designs. You make something even more beautiful or more workable. You know, you can add things. And again, that goes back to that idea of sustainability does not have to be restrictive, that we don't have to feel guilty about something. We can actually be liberated from our energy use and are dependent on that use and celebrated in other ways.
Okay, great. Well, do you guys have anything else you want to add for our listeners?
Well, Zoe, thanks for the opportunity to come in and talk with you about this. We value very much our relationship with the Student Sustainability Council. They've been a great partner in the things that we're trying to do, and we hope to continue that.
Yeah, that's definitely, I hope that folks that are listening realize the power of the voice of the Student Sustainability Council and the impact that they're doing, not just through their work directly through sustainability, but also through projects like this, to where their impact is felt all across the world, literally.
Yeah. And I think that one other thing that I want to remind our listeners about, and if you listen to last week's episode, this is going to sound really familiar, but I'll remind you guys today, and then I'll also remind you next week, that November 14th will be the Student Sustainability Council's grant workshop. So if you're somebody who's never applied for money from the SSC, if you've applied 7 times and you just want to make sure that you're submitting the best proposals, or if you've ever thought about submitting a proposal, but maybe you have no idea how to do it, that would be a great opportunity for folks to come out and kind of experience what it might be like to submit a proposal and get some help on that. So I'll be there. I think it's going to be a whole lot of fun. And we're going to go ahead and get back to the music, but I appreciate you all listening to Green Talks. And don't forget about that workshop on November 14th, which is next Wednesday. And that's going to be from 6 to 8 p.m. And the location can be found on the SSC social media pages as well as the Student Sustainability Council website. Thank you all for listening to Green Talks. And we're going to start out with a song by Dave Matthews Band.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.